Accession number 28500, reel 18.
Gaza, so much in the news has been for years now, but it was quiet then. There was no problems then, but then once the European thing started up and started sending the people to Palestine from Europe, you know, and a lot of them were bad hearts, you know, and they created a lot of trouble. And ever since that, of course, there have been problems.
So when you were first there, what were they having you do? You know, at that very early point, before Europe really started to to get all mixed up, if you like, what were they really?
Well, it was quite peaceful, and there was no problems. Everything was, you know, the law was good, and very little squabbling. But the moment that the European thing started, of course, that just set the whole thing in going. Because they sent over ships with thousands of people. And of course, my job was to try and stop them from entering the port. And it was a sheer impossibility. And they were crowded on these ships, and no sanitation, nothing. You can just imagine what it was when you went into the wind of these ships, you know, the smell. And these were the people that were landed. And of course, there were no houses for them. And then, of course, that upset up all the little bits and pieces here and there of people staying in maybe 10, 12 to a room and all that sort of thing. And then the squabbling started and the fighting. And ever since that time, there's been problems.
And which port were they trying to get into?
Haifa. Haifa was the main one, yes. That was the main one. They all came to Haifa, but we couldn't stop them. No.
So were you actually based there, or was it down in Gaza, or is Gaza not far from it?
Gaza's a good bit from Haifa. You see, we had to travel to Haifa and stay there until the ships disappeared and went back. But it was too late then. The trouble had started, and there was the small bits and pieces that were gathering there. There was squalor everywhere, and there was no sanitation. There was no houses for them. And you can just imagine, with all these people, the trouble it created, and of course, it just spread like wildfire.
So, these ships that were coming in, who was actually sending the ships, was it?
European authorities. Europe, you see. Very cleverly, they wanted to get rid of the bad hearts, and this was one way of doing it. But it created an awful lot of problems.
And were these, the people they were sending across, were they actually Europeans they were sending across?
Oh, yes. Right. And they'd all been in all sorts of trouble, you know, and Europe was quite glad to get rid of them, I suppose, is one way of doing it. But then they didn't realise that the terrible problems that would ensue from it once they landed in Palestine. And Palestine was such a quite normal country then, you see. It was sad to see it. It was sad to see the trouble.
Was there any Jews coming in as well? You know, was there any?
Oh, yes, there were Jews coming in too. But the old Jews had been there for ages, of course. They were nice people, you know, ordinary people. But some of the characters that came in from Europe were not so nice. No.
I wondered if there was any refugees coming in.
Oh, yes, all right. There was no way in stopping them, you see. They just bundled them on the ships and set them off, and they landed, and that was it. Yep.
Okay. And you said that your job was to try and stop them from coming into the port.
Yes, we were told that they shouldn't be allowed to land. It made it quite clear to the authorities there was no way in stopping that, you see. And they could see the problem. And there was no way of sending them back. You see, that was the trouble. If they could have turned the ships round and sent them back, it would have been a different story. There's no way of doing that, no.
And did you get anything to try and stop them? You know, did the authorities give you anything?
No. It was quite obvious. Yeah, I could see right away from the start that there's no point in trying it, because there's no way of being able to stop it. Because you're dealing with thousands of people coming off, and they were determined to get off by hook or by crook. Yeah.
And did they have paperwork or anything? You know, did they have the necessary paperwork or anything, or was that not your side of it?
No. The port authorities, you see, just couldn't cope with it. So it happened, and there it was.
Okay. And when you first went there and you went down to Gaza, were you living in a camp there or anything?
Yes, a tented camp it was, right in the desert. Mm-hmm.
And did you have to put up the tents yourselves? Yes,
we did all that work ourselves. Right?
And what was the real purpose of having you in Gaza, you know, in that part of Gaza?
Well, it was to divide the forces out various parts of Palestine. It was a whole division. One day was taken across, and they were all quartered in different areas, you see, and we were allocated Gaza, which was very quiet, very lonely too. I mean, it was complete desert land, but it was ideal for our shooting and range work and so forth. It was good, so we did that. But otherwise, it was a pretty poor area, I don't know.
Was there villages or anything near you out in the desert?
Oh, yes. Not so many people, you see. And gradually, as the people came into Palestine, all the villages sprouted out, got bigger and bigger and bigger. And when we left Gaza, it was quite a different place to what we did when we went in first. Mm-hmm.
And how were the locals towards you?
Well, when we went there first, you see, we got on well with them. But then the moment that the European lot came in, that finished it. That was it.
So it was creating problems?
Oh, yes.
It?
They were out to create as much trouble as they could.
And once they came in as well, had you anything to do? Were you ever near these places where there was a lot of them living, you know, 10 to 12 per room or anything?
You could see it. You see the... With no houses being available for them, shanty towns grew up everywhere. And with that, of course, and poor sanitation and all sorts of things, it was most unhealthy. No.
But were you having to do policing duties or anything there?
Well, we tried to keep clear of the area altogether, because the moment you showed your face there, it only created trouble. You see, it was a trouble with them. So we tried to keep clear of them altogether. It's an awful mistake.
And did it ever cause problems when, you know, you were there? Did you ever have a problem?
Well, the fighting started and the terrorist groups functioned, you see, began to grow up. And fighting with one another and then fighting with the civilians. And we were in the middle of the situation. It wasn't a good one.
Was the British Army, were you ever attacked, you know?
We got shot at, fired at quite often, yeah.
And did you ever know where the fighting was coming from?
We knew where they were and we tried to round them off. But then, there was always casualties amongst them, and of course, as the people were killed in that thing. Do you like people were? Hello?
That was a clock.
Okay.
So you were moved back up to the port, and then did you stay there for long as well?
No, we moved out of there quickly back to Gaza, and then we moved from Gaza to the centre of Palestine, and the various places we were billeted. But in the middle areas, that was quiet. It was only the townships that were the problem was. That's where all the main characters were, you see, and that was where the main trouble was. Tel Aviv, Jaffa, and Gaza all became hot spots.
And were you ever up to Tel Aviv and Jaffa? Did you ever get up there?
But when we went there first of all, of course, it was all right. But then once the bad hats moved in, that was it finished. No good.
Okay. So how long would you have been there for altogether?
In Haifa? Haifa were only a short time, just the time of trying to stop the ships disembarking.
Uh-huh.
But that was only for a couple of weeks, and then we had to withdraw it altogether because we could see it was a waste of time.
But in Gaza and Gaza, Palestine?
We were in Gaza for about 6 months altogether. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And where did you go after that then?
We went to inland to roughly just south of Jerusalem. That was quiet. And then we moved up to Tiberias, up in the very north, at the north of Italy, off Palestine. And that was good. It was quiet there too, because the Barghats hadn't got up as far up as that. Then we moved back to Bethlehem. And Bethlehem became a problem too, because of the historical setup. And that was the problem there. In Nablus, and also down to Jericho on the Dead Sea. That was there was problems there too. Yeah. But by the time we were ready to leave Palestine, there was problems everywhere. You know, the whole thing had gone completely.
So, when you were there, were you ever having to, you know, like earlier in the war, you were involved with like prisoners of war and that. When you were in Palestine generally, did you ever have anything like that to do with, you know, these people that were coming in or anything?
Oh, yes, we were squabbling and fighting with them continuously after that, yes. Fighting, start shooting at us, and then we had to fire back at them and inflict casualties. But it went from bad to worse. It did.
And did they seem to get plenty of weapons?
Oh, they could get weapons, of course. The terrorist groups all formed up, and they became quite strong, you know, the different groups in Palestine. And it went on and on.
And did, you know, did yourselves, the British Army, were they having to take precautions around the camps and things?
Oh, yes, you had to take precautions. No matter where you went, you had to be careful, yes. It was only when we went to Lebanon and then down into Syria and Damascus that we had peace and quiet. We came back to Palestine to find exactly the same as we had left it.
And why did they have you moving down to that area? What was the reason?
Well, there was problems at that time too. The Syria had been dominated by the French, and squabbling there. So we had to step in there and keep the peace. And we managed to do that quite well too, and then moved out of Syria altogether back into Palestine. A short time later, we got the order to disband in Cairo.
And how did you feel about that?
Oh, it was a sad day, because we were badly let down, because in May the previous year, the government had promised us that we would be taken home as a battalion and disbanded at Keith in Balshire. But that didn't come to pass. We took a very dim view of that.
And by this time as well, it was 1946, were a lot of men leaving the battalion?
Oh, yes, I see. The old soldiers, not to see their time expired enough, and a lot of them were leaving. So I was left with a young battalion of very young officers and lots of young soldiers, you know, who'd never been in action. And so it was a peculiar situation, really. But we managed. We managed to get down to Cairo without any problems, because there was the bombings on the railway, you know, tried to bomb the trains and so forth. But we managed to get down there, clear of that. And then Egypt was quiet, with no problems in Egypt.
And when you were in these, was it, whilst you were in Gaza and all these different places that you've spoken about as well, were you still in camp? Tented camps,
yes.
Oh, and what about the mess situation there? Did you have a mess or anything?
Oh, yes. Well, there was always the officer's mess and the sergeant's mess, and there were tents, all tents. But it was completely tented camping, yeah.
And did you still have mess nights and things?
Oh, yes. We still carried on with the mess nights.
And were they still quite formal? Or?
Oh, yes. They were quite good. That's something we'd always done, you see. We didn't want to stop it, no.
And were you getting, like, by now, we're past the war, you know, it's 1946, but were you getting plenty of supplies by now, you know, food and things? Were you Or was rationing affecting you or anything?
No, the army rationing system was still in force, and there was no change.
So you're
Of course, when we went down to Egypt, of course, we got all the extra rations from Egypt, which was different altogether. So we did quite well, actually. Yeah. Well, it was good right up to the very finish.
And these famous old cities that you were going into, you know, like Bethlehem, Jerusalem and that, were you managing to get any sightseeing done at the time, you know?
Very little. We did manage to get to... There were so many historical places, you know, we were able to go to see most of them, and we used to try and get to take a company at a time to so-and-so a place and explain what happened there and the religious story. And that was good in Palestine. It was the only good thing that there was there at the time, taking the soldiers to all these religious places and pointing out the history of the land. It was a tremendous history in Palestine. I enjoyed it. It was really good.
And I know you've mentioned the terrorists, but their aim, was it to get the British out?
Not. Yes, get the British out, and they thought, you see, there would be harmony, but of course there was never harmony as long as the bad hearts were there.
Okay, and was there any fighting, but you know, like just now, as you say, we're hearing about the Gaza Strip between the Palestinians and the Israelis and that. Was there problems then between the two factions?
Oh, yes. It got worse and worse as time went on, and there was more fighting and more squabbling in the terrorist groups. And that went on all the time. And of course, they were turning their fire on us too. You see, we were being fired on quite often from various places in Palestine. So we were quite glad to get away out of it in that respect. Although I was disappointed because Palestine was an ideal training ground for the British Army. You know, the weather was good and you get all the different things done that you wanted to do. It was really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. And when you were there, what type of uniform would you have been wearing? Was it still the one in Europe?
Or? Yes, a KD, you know, the khaki drill. That was all. And the very warm, very pleasant.
Were you wearing shorts or anything?
Shorts, yes.
Mm-hmm. And was there a big British presence there then?
Then, quite a quite. It was gradually being withdrawn all the time, of course. And when we moved down to Egypt, we were probably amongst the last groups to move out of Palestine, actually.
So yes. They were starting to move them out?
Oh, yes, until they were all out altogether.
Okay. So you went down to Cairo. So what was your impressions of Cairo?
Oh, so different from Palestine, because there was no fighting or squabbling, and we had a good camp, and we had a Church of Scotland canteen run by Scots lasses from Aberdeenshire and Bash. So it was quite homely in a way, you know, it was good. And it was like our camp was in the same part as the canteen, so we were well looked after. You could tea and suppers and all sorts of things. Was good.
And was this a tented camp again?
Yes, all tented. Mm.
And did you have a tent to yourself? Because you know, as you said, you were a lieutenant colonel.
Colonel, yes. Uh-huh. Oh, I just a tent myself. I had a backman looking after me. He would come in the morning, first thing in the morning, valley, and a cup of tea and that, and he'd look after my clothing and so forth. And that was customary, of course. Oh yes, it was good. It was good, but it was just sad to have to post all these jobs, you know, all over the place. But we were very lucky in that respect. The 2nd Battalion Gordons was in Tripoli, so I was able to get in touch with the CO there and say, look, now, would you take my soldiers? He says, yes, we'll take the whole lot. So I gradually posted off so many soldiers to each to the battalion in Tripoli. So that was a big help, because I had an awful problem with the GHQ, you know, being a big, huge organisation, and all these officers there. And there was this officer, an English lieutenant colonel, who was in charge of postings, and he sent for me, you see, and more or less looking down at me as a that he would post all the personnel of the 6th Battalion. And I said, oh no, I said, I'm not prepared to have that. I said, I, as a commanding officer, will post my own men, and I want to see where they go and see if they're in. Oh, but he said, that's not the way here, this is GHQ, forget that. I said, no. But by good luck, the brigadier was a cabin in Highlander. So I could see I wasn't going to get any joy with him. So I went to the brigadier. I said, look, sir, I said, I need your help here. And I explained my situation and said, that's what he had said. He says, don't you worry. He says, leave it with me. I will see that this happens. So he had spoken to the colonel of the postings and said, look, postings will all be done by McCarthy. That way. Well, but funny thing was, yeah, let's give you a laugh. I had to go away for 2 days on a court of inquiry, and I was away. And when I came back, my two ICUs are captain, a young captain, and he was looking very worried. And he said, I've got bad news for you, sir. I said, no, what's happened? Well, he said, when you were away, the postings officer at GHQ, he phoned through and said that he was posting Gordon down to an English regiment in Suez. And he said, of course, he said, I couldn't do anything with that. So it's done. I said, that's all right, don't worry. So I just picked up the phone, got hold of the brigadier, and I said, can I come and see you? He said, yes, right, well, so went and saw him and explained to him what had happened then, you see. And he was not amused. So he says, right, hold on. Picked up the phone, he phoned through to the colonel, and he says, come and see me. So when the colonel came in, you see, saw me, he knew fine that there was trouble ahead. So brigadier said, look, he says, I issued instructions before that under no circumstances anyone to be posted other than by Colonel McCarthy. He says, why did that happen? He says, right, he says, get in touch with the CO in Suez and send the men straight back. 2 days later, back came my Gordon Highlanders. So to keep the matter in order, I thought, I will phone myself, the CO in Suez, and thank them for sending them back, and they apologize for the mistake being made, you see. And I got the CO, and he says, oh yes, he says, wonderful lot of chaps you had, he says, so clean, so tidy, and so smart. He says, I'm very proud of them. He said, but he says, the only thing was, he says, we didn't know what they were saying. So I thought that was funny. So I told the brigadier, he roared with laughter. It was great fun. But I never had any trouble after that. Got them all posted to different places. And the drivers and all the other chaps, got them all posted. And they had no more problems with the gun with the posting. It just shows you the kind of problems that you can come up against, you see, in that situation. Always somebody ready to make as much trouble as they could, you know.
And the men at that time as well, who were in your battalion, were they still mainly from the northeast of Scotland?
Well, most were Scots, you see. We had quite a number of Englishmen in making up the reinforcements at the finish, but the majority were all Scots, you know.
And how many men would you have had in the battalion approximately at that time?
Well, roughly, I went down to Cairo with, must have been close to 700. We were certainly short, because the normal battalion would have been about 800, but of course with people being posted and people going home and so forth, we were down to 700. It just took a little while to get them all posted, you see. But then I was lucky in being able to post the soldiers straight to Tripoli, so there's no problem there. The other problem I had was the posting of all the other chaps, you know, the drivers, the cleaners, and all the other chaps involved in the battalion. But that was done too, so I had no problems. So I was able to go home feeling quite happy that the boys had all gone out to decent surroundings, decent people. It was good.
It's quite a lot of men, wasn't it? You know, it's quite a lot of men to move about.
Oh, yes. And I was left on this day with my batman, an Irishman from Northern Ireland. And I said, no. I said, you're the last of the Gordon Highlanders. So what am I going to do with you? So this wild world. So I said, like, we'll get something done for you. So I went to GHQ, and there was an Irish major there who didn't have an apartment. So I said, would you take him as your apartment? Yes, most certainly. So I got my apartment posted to GHQ, to this Irish major, and I was left myself with no troops, nothing. Everything had gone.
How did you feel?
Oh, dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. But Brigadier said, right. He said, no, he said, you go and get a spot of leave. So he said, go away for a fortnight and then enjoy yourself because you've got this finished. So I said, right. He says, what do you want to do? So I said, well, what I want to do is, I want to go to El Alamein, to the cemeteries there, and where all the soldiers were killed, and then go on through the desert to Tobruk. And Tobruk, of course, was well known for the troubles that was there when the Germans came and captured the units there. So he gave me a jeep and a driver and a chit, giving me authority to move, and I set off a whole fortnight and right up to Tobruk, and then I turned and came back to Egypt again. And then by this time he had arranged for me to wait for a ship to take me home. And eventually the ship came in, and I was able to go aboard and go back to UK. Not without many interesting things happening, because when we were crossing the Med, we ran into a real nasty storm. And the ship was buffeted about. You know, you couldn't believe it, that in a quiet sea like the Mediterranean, you could be buffeted like that. And of course, most people were sick, you know, with it. But of course, that never troubled me. And when I went down in the morning for breakfast, there was nobody for breakfast. Just the staff, the captain and his staff were there, and he gave me a loud clap when I came in because I was the only one that turned up for breakfast. So he says, what do you want? And I always remember it was kippers, and I didn't go down very well, but I said, well, have you got porridge? Yes, of course. I had a bowl of porridge and a cup of tea, and that was my breakfast. But I was so glad I was able to do that, because everybody was feeling the worst of wear after the storm. So we got into France, and we were billeted in a hotel on the seaboard. And would you believe it? The manageress of the hotel was a lady from Aberdeen, she said. So she said, right, she said, I have a room here for special guests. That will be your room tonight. So a little huge room. You could have had a dance in it, you know. And I thought, well. So I had this room. So that evening, I said, would you mind coming out and have a drink with me in the mess? Yes, certainly. So I took her out and we had a drink in the mess. And I was ready to proceed to the north next day. And on the train up to Calais. And went to Calais, and waiting for a ship to cross a ferry to go across to Dover. My sister, who was commissioned and on Montgomery's staff in Germany, knew that I was coming home, so she came through, and we met in Calais, and the day before I then went aboard the steamer for Dover. So it was funny to catch up with her too, and she saw she went back to Germany again, and I came home.
When had been the last time you'd saw her? How long had it been?
Oh gosh, it's been a couple of years almost.
And how was France at that time? You know, like Calais, I know it were after the war now, where 46, 47?
Yes.
Around about then. How, you know, was it still badly damaged?
No, it was